As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
As of the last episode of Time's Ours that we did right here on The Athletic, we really weren't sure if either of the Chiefs' 2020 starting tackles would be back on the roster in any way, shape, or form for the 2021 NFL season. Now, thanks to a tweet here, a press conference there, Brett Veach putting out some timelines, seems like that may actually be one position group that's attempting to run it back for yet another season. There is a lot to talk about from what was supposed to be a pretty quiet week and change. And we'll do it here on Time's Ours. I'm Joshua Briscoe with Nate Taylor. Seth Kaiser will be tagging in momentarily. But Nate, the press conference, the Monday morning Brett Veach press conference, just given breaking news after breaking news. What a whirlwind. What an experience.
It is officially dawned on what our future is, Josh, for the foreseeable spring. These things are cyclical. It was around 9:10 on Monday that I had to come to the realization that I'm going to be writing about the offensive line for the foreseeable future. Now, that should be compelling for Chiefs fans. I know they don't score touchdowns, but they do keep your quarterback upright.
If hold on. Some of them score touchdowns.
One of them scored a touchdown.
Yeah, fair.
But this happens from time to time. And so I just want to tell people I need to call our colleagues. And this is not to scare you, Chiefs fan, whoever you are, he or she. But there was a time where my good buddies, Stephen Holder and Zach Kiefer in Indianapolis, all they wrote about was the offensive line. Mm-hmm. It was like a 2-year thing. I don't know if that's going to be the case. I just know up until September 5th, probably, that most of my stories are going to be offensive line related. Now, with the Colts specifically, homeboy was just like, I can't do it no more. I have to be anywhere but here. Now, that will not be the case for Patrick Mahomes. We assume the Chiefs scouting and front office will manage the situation better than what happened in Indianapolis. But it is fascinating to me that, you know, Josh, when we first started really discussing this team, even before we did the podcast in 2018, it was like, okay, the whole season's about Patrick Mahomes because he's mm-hmm. first year starting quarterback. The whole season's about him. A lot of ways, you know, 19 was about, okay, can they do it? You know, a little bit of it is defense because there's all these new characters on defense and they've completely restructured it with Steve Spagnuolo. Last year, as you mentioned, was sort of running back. Now it's about the offensive line. You could tell me a starting week one offensive line. Name names, and I'll believe it. That's where we are.
For any one position or the whole thing? I'm not sure I could definitely give you any one position.
Right? That's kind of the point. Like, Lucas Niang is a legend already.
Yes. I was just about to say, I think my first pick, if you were going to draft starting week one lineman, I think Lucas Niang might be my number one pick. And that dude hasn't played professional football yet.
He hadn't even played a preseason game.
No, he hasn't been in a practice. I don't know if he's going to show up to camp jacked or flabby. I don't know. I don't know what kind of shape he's in.
I mean, Nick Allegretti's in the mix, you know. It was interesting that Brett Veach said that Nick Allegretti took a step forward. I agree with him. That is a fair statement. We can take that, hold on to it, feel good about it. He said Andrew Wiley was consistent at the guard position. We would like to contest that in a courtroom.
This claim is under review. Yeah.
Yeah, there's been times where he's been pretty good. There's been times where he even acknowledged that he has had bad days. He should never play tackle again. There's a little bit of gray to that. Then you get to the idea of he never mentioned Austin Ryder, who was a free agent. This is Brett Veach I'm mentioning. I think I have the most faith in Mitchell Schwartz, but that's giving faith to, as I check it here, a man who, you know, is going to be 32 when the season starts, mm-hmm. coming off of a back injury where, you know, Brett Veach said that it was a disc, which leads one to believe, although we don't know if this is completely a fact yet, if it's a herniated disc, but that might be the case. Mm-hmm. But he got his disc repaired, or one of his discs repaired in his vertebrae, in his spine. And when you hear the name, and this is not to slight him because he's been actually pretty good at his job. But when you hear the name Rick Burkholder, Josh, just what comes to mind?
I don't know. This feels like a trick question because the way you framed it makes me think it should be a negative thing. I think here's what I think of. I think of that man being at a podium for damn near an hour this time a year ago, given COVID protocol updates.
Yeah, and did a great job with that.
Did a great job.
By and large, yes.
I also am forced, because Twitter has forced me here, to mm-hmm. think about some of the injury sort of day-to-day kind of concerns that have popped up when there have been players who have been, you know, day-to-day and then have gotten surgery later on that have never really come back fully the same. Maybe some optimistic timelines probably in there somewhere. Did that cover most of the bases? Did I miss anything?
No, you're spot on. He was masterful when it came to getting the team through the season, even though he unfortunately, you know, contracted COVID, and we're grateful that he has come through it on the other side. But I do know that when it comes to the messaging, and this is why I bring up Rick Burkholder's name, a longtime head athletic trainer, one of the best in the NFL, has been by Andy Reid's side since the beginning, y'all, since like 1999, I believe, or with Philly, of course. So, but we all know the messaging, the way it's communicated, has been a little muddy at times, a little bit unclear. Now, I could say that he was accurate in saying that Eric Berry was day-to-day, because we literally are day-to-day. And then he literally said literally day-to-day. And I'll never forget it. I know fans won't forget it. There's been times where, you know, he was pretty good. Nobody remembers this, but he was pretty good about the timeline for Chad Henne's return in 2019, although Chad Henne never played, and that he basically said that, no, Chad Henne will be fine. This isn't a career ender. Despite his age and the severity of him fracturing his ankle. He was correct on that. All I'm here to say is Brett Veach looked at a sheet of paper and told us Eric Fisher's going to be ready by training camp?
Or less in that tone of voice, it seemed a little bit, right?
Yeah, and look, I credit the Chiefs for giving us some information because they have more than we do. I should
absolutely sure
say that up front. Like they, like from a medical standpoint, they know how the surgery went. They know what was repaired. We don't know, and I wasn't been privy to this, if it was a full tear or rupture, like there's shades to an Achilles injury, as is with most cases. They know more information than us. Cool. It was nice of them to tell us when he had the surgery, which was 5 days after the AFC Championship. So they took the necessary steps pretty quickly. And if all goes well, he'll be back in less than 8 months. I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if it's optimistic, like to a point that's, a little pie in the sky-ish. Or if it's true. So here's the reporting I did, Josh. Brevish talked. I got on the phone. Tried to get some understanding as to like, hey, you know, there are people that have more information than me. It's my job to sort of relay that on as we move forward. You want to know the response I got back?
I'd love to know.
In essence, it was nobody knows.
Fair enough, I guess.
It could happen, but nobody knows. Everybody heals and returns from an injury differently. That's all I can give Chiefs fans comfort in. Mm-hmm. So look, it may go into October. It may be that he's slightly early in July and you can test it more so in August. But the season kind of, in a weird way, comes down to the rehab of Eric Fisher, Mitchell Schwartz, and a little sprinkle of Patrick Mahomes, you know, who we all assume is going to be fine after his turf toe surgery shortly after the Super Bowl. What do you think about how this frames everything? Because I feel like we got some answers from Brett Veach, as much as he can give on March 1st. Before free agency starts in 2 weeks. But I think those answers still lead to a lot of questions.
Yeah. So also let me make sure that we get the sort of the facts of it out there. So what Veach said is he was asked about the recovery timelines of Schwartz, Fisher, and Patrick Mahomes. He said Mahomes will be ready by camp. He's ahead of Schwartz and Fisher, which makes sense. Schwartz, as we said, he had the surgery that he himself tweeted about a little over a week ago now at this point, or about a week ago as of this point. Saying that he wants to come back and is looking forward to a healthy 2021. And he got the surgery, was hoping to be able to come back for the Super Bowl for something along the playoffs, obviously never happened. And then Fisher was obviously the big surprise because of everything you just laid out about the Achilles timeline. So with all of that out there, if I'm allowed to go back, not even just to Veach on Monday, but to go all the way back to the last episode of the show we did, you talk about how it frames things. I can't say it changes everything because I'm leaving an asterisk there, but it changes everything with an asterisk. It changes a ton of how this offseason is going to be discussed because we're talking about 2 weeks ago, we thought the Chiefs were probably, that there was a very good chance that they were going to go into 2021 with two new tackles. And also, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to Seth here in a little bit about this, but something that Seth has absolutely just beaten into the ground for the last couple of years is how much the Chiefs put on their tackles and how it's one of the reasons that a lesser invested in interior offensive line has largely been, if not great, at least good enough because you're putting Mitch Schwartz and oftentimes Eric Fisher on an island, and that's just sort of how this offense works. So replacing both of those tackles with both of those roles really puts that entire unit under, I don't know, Super Bowl amounts of stress. Like, that's the worst case scenario. Well, then it was maybe Mitch Schwartz is coming back, and okay, well now, you know, could Lucas Niang and a tackle from the first two rounds compete for that left tackle spot, and you just YOLO, whoever wins that spot wins it. Now you are YOLOing the left tackle spot, protecting Patrick Mahomes' blind side, but maybe there's a move there. Maybe something happens in free agency. You cut Eric Fisher and go try to bring someone in at left tackle. Niang's your swing guy. Maybe he's the right tackle of the future. Schwartz only has 1 year left on his deal. And if he gets hurt, Niang could go out there. Maybe you bring back Mike Rimmers also.
Yep.
But now, if, and I think that the if here is just sort of, it's complicated. But if they actually believe that Eric Fisher is going to be ready to go by week one, then the flexibility at the position changes enormously. Now, obviously, I still think I tweeted this. I want to save this to anyone who has not already tweeted it at us. If Eric Fisher and Mitch Schwartz are as healthy as they were this day 5 years ago as of week one, they should still draft a tackle somewhere relatively early on, yes, because they're both older. They're both coming off of major injuries. They should still be looking to add to the tackle position. Easy peasy. This one's just, yeah, I get it. The thing that I would love to know what you think in terms of all of the, you know, the idea that no one really knows what's happening and we're all just doing our best here. Here's what's confusing to me. And this is where I wonder if I am taking the bait on something. But if you're going to say, what's Occam's razor? What's the simplest solution to decoding what Brett Veach said on Monday? The idea that Rick Burkholder would be purposefully misleading Brett Veach is a total bonkers nonsense non-starter. Like, it can't be that. Cannot be that.
But we should also be clear. That's best case scenario. That is A, no setbacks. B,
right,
nothing else happening between now and when the surgery occurred. And given that we're still in a pandemic and nobody knows how the offseason is going to go and nobody knows how you can train or how the rehabs, what Rick Burkholder put on a piece of paper for Brett Veach is best case scenario.
But if I take the acknowledgement that it's best case scenario, I don't know what benefit there is. And this is where I'm hoping that maybe you got an answer. And if not, then so be it. But I don't know if there's a good reason to be publicly super best case scenario about something like that, unless it's just, maybe it's just throwing smoke screens because they're going to try to trade up for a tackle in the first round or, yep, something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe there's that, but if they're going to do that, they're going to cut Fisher right before the draft. And maybe, I guess it could be, they could cut him after the draft, I suppose. Regardless, it just, to me, it doesn't make a ton of sense to think that anyone in there is being excessively untruthful over something that still, though, it doesn't fully pass the smell test, because it seems like something in that crock pot there has gone bad. And I don't, and I just simply don't know what to think about it.
This is, I didn't know we were going to do this, but this is a class, ladies and gentlemen, and status quo. What is the status quo moving forward? Status quo could change. Therefore, there's a consequence to those changes. Mm-hmm. It makes sense right now, because I've thought about this and sort of asked this out loud. Okay. You could save a good portion of money by cutting Eric Fisher, but you'd have to do something with that.
Right.
We're still 13 days away from when you can negotiate with free agents. I believe my math is correct there. Mm-hmm. All right. Here's the first rule, kids. For the next 8 to 9 days, there's going to be so much lying. Mm-hmm. That's going to be floated, mm-hmm, out about free agency, because that's what happens. Hey, I'm did you hear about this? Because I mean, if that's true, then that changes this. Like, there's just, mm-hmm, gonna be a lot of, you know, well, I'm texting people like, well, I heard this is what they're thinking, and I'm like, but I hear something completely different from somebody else that I trust,
right?
And it's up for the next 8 to 9 days. It's just gonna be funny to know, all right, were these comments were clearly made at the time, given the status quo. But if you want to move on from Eric Fisher, in a lot of ways, it's cheaper to retain him, even at his number from a cap standpoint, mm-hmm, than to have to go into a bidding war with tackles, because any tackle worth a you-know-what is essentially going to be a bidding war on the free agency market, and it's going to take draft capital, whether now or in the future, to move up if you want to take a left tackle, if the board falls the way that I kind of think it's going to fall, which is, hey, tackles are important. Did you just see the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
So you could hope for best case scenario, because that at least gives you a year to figure it out with more money, we hope, with the cap sort of going up, because we hope the world will be better. We hope that a March from now, we hope I won't be going to a grocery store this morning with a mask on my face.
Right.
So after all those hopes, you can see why it makes sense to say, well, he knows the system. We know he's a good player. We know he's a Pro Bowler. There's not a lot of history to say that, like, hey, left tackles with Achilles do blank.
Yeah.
But you need a guy to commit to you that you know is either comparable or better to move off, to move that money elsewhere. They're kind of, the Chiefs are in a tough position, and I hope I'm explaining it halfway decently, mm-hmm. but I do get the sense that, okay, they've always appreciated Eric Fisher. It's just now that the world has sort of caught up to what the Chiefs' thought process was about mm-hmm. how they evaluated their own player, which is cool. Better to get your roses now than never, Eric Fisher. Mm-hmm. But I do know, too, that they're going to check in on his rehab. They're going to see where he is. They want to know if he's progressing at which matches up with the timeline that Burkholder sort of gave to Veach. But you got to be opportunistic at the same time, and I know Eric knows that. So you're playing a little bit of both ends, but in all honesty, Josh, if they can get, like, I think if you could tell the Chiefs, like, you can get away with another year of Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, maybe slightly less of the production that you got in previous years, they might end up taking it. Because, again, maybe people are lying already. I thought Trent Williams was a legitimate option. Trent Williams is going to make all the money.
Uh-huh.
Despite the fact that we ain't got no cap space. That's when I say we ain't got no cap space, I mean half the teams in the league are like, but dog, we ain't got no cap space.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let me give you two things to this, because I also want to pivot out a little bit into the story you wrote up in The Athletic right now. You want to read more about the Chiefs in the offensive line? Because Nate's going to write 97 more of these stories from this point forward. There's a version of it up on The Athletic right now. Go watch that one. Got a great picture at the top of the article with Patrick Mahomes, like, basically cupping the heads of Mitch Schwartz and Eric Fisher. Really good work on the photography department on this story. It's very, very good. But you can go read this and get more info from what Veach said and kind of where Nate has headed on a bunch of this stuff. But two elements of that I think are worth drilling in on a little bit. One is, if the Chiefs think that Eric Fisher is going to look like Eric Fisher at week 4 to 6 or something, and we're mm-hmm. You're not talking about going 8 or maybe 16 weeks without Eric Fisher, that's still a huge benefit, because 8, obviously, if you're kind of doing some, like, knee-jerk Achilles recovery timeline stuff, 16 if you release him outright. Maybe Lucas Niang can hold that spot for a few weeks. Maybe they bring back Mike Rimmers and have a swing tackle who can go back into that third role whenever Fisher is healthy. Rimmers was obviously a nightmare in the Super Bowl. I wonder if the rest of the offensive line wasn't a series of other backups, if that would have gone a little differently. And also, it's a good pass rush. I digress.
Yes.
But it's easier to plan for 4 games without Fisher than 8 or 10 or 16, or actually, really, maybe 17. But the other thing that you mentioned kind of offhandedly earlier, that I think this is going to be my thing. I think this is going to be the thing that I am constantly shouting at the sky as people. And look, I mean, all the mock drafts are a blast, but once you get to 31,
it's really hard.
It's hard. like, I have fallen in love with Samuel Cosmi from Texas. Because I'm like, well, you know, he's ending up around the 20s. If he falls a little bit, listen, man, you can say whatever you want about Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State.
That's my guy. Tevin,
oh, really?
Right now, Tevin, I'm going to be grinding through this tape, sir.
Ain't going to be there, Nate. Tevin's going to go in the late 20s. It's just going to happen. You know what you're going to have? You're going to have Alex bleeping Leatherwood, a man who at this point, I bought a Chiefs Alex Leatherwood jersey just to have it ahead of time because that's where all the mocks are at this point. And but do you that he's better than Lucas Niang? I don't.
I don't know. Right. Can he play can we just tell people quickly, Josh? This is hard.
Yes.
Left tackle is just as hard at times as quarterback. Let's never forget difficult. This, okay? Like, yeah. 3rd and 8, you go out there and block Khalil Mack. You go out there and do that. Like, it's really hard, especially with an Andy Reid offense where they're like, you got it, right? Tyreek Hill needs 4 seconds on Chip Watts. Go.
Yep.
Just go. Yeah. Like,
hey, don't let Nick Bosa buy you for 4 seconds or else we lose the Super Bowl. Ready? Break.
Right. So I just
it's not even like I haven't found a person on planet Earth that doesn't think that the guy out of Oregon's not a legit like top 5 pick and that he's not all that.
He looks so monstrous on tape. Monstrous.
He looks great. He looks great. Also, even then, Luke Jokel went 2nd whenever the Chiefs took Eric Fisher 1st. Like that was like a whole deal. Like those dudes were banging it out at the top and like actually not. One of those guys ended up being a really nice player and one totally busted. But even after him, you find yourself talking it. There are so many teams that are not going to get Sewell. I haven't spent much time learning how to pronounce his name because he's not going to be there.
We'll get there in April.
Well, that's right. I'll get there eventually. Right now, it's March 2nd. Everybody chill. You're going to get to some team that thinks that they're in consideration for being an actual contender. They just have to protect their quarterback better. And so the board's not going to fall how you think it's going to fall because eventually Tevin Jenkins is going to go in the mid-20s to some team that thinks, well, if we just had a left tackle, maybe it's going to be him. I just think they're going to – it's so uncertain by the end there, man. And it's also like – I don't know. You think they're going to trade up for somebody? Like, that's not the game I really want to play. And there aren't that many tackles.
Right. Shout out to another friend, Jordan Rari, who covers the Rams for us. I keep telling myself, maybe Tevin Jackson will go to the... That's right. The Rams ain't got no first-round picks. They'll never have another first-round pick. Because even the Rams need a left tackle at this point. Yeah. Like, half the league looked up and was like, hey, man, there haven't been any good left tackles in the last 5 drafts. Like,
yeah.
Dog! So... It's, you know, these things are, again, generational. They kind of go in a circle. I just want to fall. Just let me fall. Josh, let me fall in love with Tevin Jenkins before he breaks my heart. As if, like, I'm on The Bachelor or something. And it's like,
yes,
you were never winning, darling. Like, it's good you were here.
Yes. Yes.
You're a fine young lady. But I have to put the rose back on the tray. That's what Tevin Jenkins is going to do to Chiefs fans. Because I'm gonna go here. I'm going to go to, you know, wherever. Like, I need to look this up here in a minute. But, yeah, we're going to learn so many offensive linemen's names. And then you know what's going to happen, Briscoe? Because this is my semi-hot take.
Oh, I'm so ready. I hope we have the same one.
Wait, did I drop in right as a hot take is about...
Yes! I was just going to say that I really didn't want to do this until Seth was here. Nate, hit me.
All right, kids. Your guy, Josh, just told you, forget tackle. They all gone. They're gone. Is any team going to pick up a phone call from the Chiefs and be like, sure, I would love to help you get better by moving up 10 spots to take the tackle that I actually can need? The odds of that is not happening. So, I slid this in to the Athletics mock draft. Everybody sit down. They're looking at defensive ends, kids.
You're damn right they are.
They're looking at right defensive they ends.
Are. That's happening. It's already over. It's over, Nate. It's already happened. The draft is over, and they took an edge. Carlos Basham Jr., buy your jerseys.
Jalen Phillips. I mean, come on.
I think Jalen Phillips is widely too beloved as a prospect. The Chiefs are going to take somebody who may have been there at the end of the 2nd. It's just what's going to happen.
They're going to trade up six spots and take a guy that had a consensus third round grade.
1,000%. Hey, they're going to trade up seven spots and they're going to take a defensive tackle that they want to kick out to edge.
Don't you dare dismerch Brendan Daly and his scouting abilities, okay?
You know what? That's a good call.
Mike Dana was.
That's a good call. Brendan Daly is a new... He's a difference, right? Because he didn't come around till after the Passanio and Speaks picks.
Hey, by the way, never forget my time covering the Chiefs. Breland Speaks, who's already been on three different teams. Like, whoo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Things change quickly in the league.
I'm they so do. Glad you said that. I want to get what your bet would have been there, Seth. But I don't even remember where I said this. I can't remember if I said this into a live microphone or if I've just been mumbling it to myself as I stare at the ceiling at night. But I'm gonna have to find this before this podcast drops because you're gonna move the line on this, Nate.
Yep.
If I could go bet on a position group that the Chiefs use with their first round pick, I don't know what the odds for edge would be, but I'm guessing that it would not be above tackle or maybe even interior offensive lineman at this point. And I'm buying some new shoes with the Chiefs taking an edge in the first round. Like, it just seems like it makes too much sense.
I just, so you made it, the tackles being gone. There are two, like, blue chip tackle prospects in this class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And either one of them, especially the Oregon guy. Sewell,
yep.
How do you say
his name? Seth, it's hilarious that you weren't listening to the 30 seconds before you joined the call, because it was me saying the Oregon guy. What's his name? Sewell? I swear
I just
that
call him the Oregon so monster. Funny. The that's Oregon so monster funny. That swallowed Oregon... up all oh, of Pac-12 defensive linemen.
That dude, I would, if they wanted to trade up 10 spots, but I mean, that guy's not going to drop to 20 to 21. Right.
No.
Neither of the tackles are. And that's the reality you live in when you're trying to figure out a tackle. I personally, I'm so confused, and I'm sure you guys talked about this. By the way, dear listeners, I apologize. I did not have any way of getting out of an obligation.
You can just say that you had to sell some drugs. It's fine.
That's scheduled for after the podcast. So the Fisher Schwartz news is great news. Like, but also I've got a real strong anchor man, I don't believe you vibe,
mm-hmm.
especially with Fisher. With Schwartz, he's getting surgery now. It's March. He seems optimistic. I don't think he would have even held off this long unless he thought the recovery time wasn't too bad. Like, mm-hmm. fair enough, right? An Achilles tear that took place in late January, on the other hand.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, he's going to be back for training camp. I'm like, that doesn't seem right.
No.
And so I want them to grab a tackle. Up until I was ready to come into this podcast, because I'm writing a piece right now on free agents, and one of the things I'm going to write about as I start viewing it more than 10,000 feet in the air, like big swings that they could take, I was all on board the, you know what, whatever it takes to get just a meeting with Trent Williams and just say, like, that really was. And that would have required cutting Fisher, of course, and then a number of other things.
Yeah.
But like,
that's what I've also learned the last few days. Was like, oh, that's probably not going to be enough. Oh, that's right. How much did Trent Brown make a couple years ago?
Yep.
Oh, right.
Well, and that's the problem. And that's the problem. Like, Williams, because he's had a bit of a unique career, he might not be ready to, like, full-blown trophy hunt.
Well, can I tell you something else about Trent Williams really quick that I just learned?
Yes.
He's older than Mitchell Schwartz.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. He absolutely is. And that makes you hope maybe he's willing to trophy hunt. But even if he's trophy hunting, you're not getting that dude at trophy hunting prices.
Correct.
You're paying that dude $16 million a year, $17 million a year.
Yeah.
And that's trophy hunting, like, hardcore prices, because he was awesome last year. Like, you turn on Trent Williams tape, like, there were conversations in training camp. Like, he came in and was dominating Nick Bosa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty serious stuff.
Yeah.
And so, but that's the level that I was of panic that I'm at with, like, the tackle situation. Now, to be fair, I really like Lucas Niang, but I don't know if they consider him a left tackle. I don't know. But They come out with this Fisher news, and I'm sure you guys talked about it, but honestly, it's not that I don't believe them. Nope. Wait, that is exactly what it is. Now that I've had an opportunity to think about it. It just, there's no, tell me the time an Achilles tear, unless it was more like an Achilles hole or like an Achilles blip, but that's not a thing. That's not real.
Yeah, so, the best example I could give, and it circulated around the last 2 days, but is Eric Fisher Terrell Suggs? Like, but that's Terrell Suggs closer to his prime than what I would consider Fisher is at this point. But hey, you know, Terrell Suggs came back in five months. There's the go.
Did Suggs come back in 5 months?
Yeah, it was the 2012 offseason to regular season. I mean, so but Terrell Suggs is like a Hall of Fame level player. I mean,
and he's just, I've seen the two look like they're built a little differently.
Yeah, he has been God blessed in terms of talent, tenacity, work that, like, Terrell Suggs is a pretty perfect player in the modern NFL, given what his ceiling was, I guess you could say, when he was coming through the draft and based on where he went in terms of situation. Because guess what, kid? Situation is so, so important. But, like, yeah, I mean, just be Terrell Suggs. That's the best I could give you in the anomaly category that the Chiefs are hoping that Eric Fisher gets pretty close to or near.
And boy, does that make me uncomfortable. Like, but here's the other side of things. If they've decided, like, if they really believe that Mitch is going to be back, that's a big deal. I still think, like, it wouldn't hurt my feelings if they were, like, so hardcore on offensive line this year. Like, okay, our tackle situation might be a little different at left tackle, but if we can get really high quality play everywhere else on the line, it's not that big a deal. Because if you can avoid a glaring weakness at left tackle, you don't need dominant play there. But what if they rely? Like, I have this recurring nightmare that they rely on both those dudes to be healthy and don't do a whole lot else, and then neither of them are healthy, and I weep openly during Chiefs games.
Josh, you know what the worst case scenario is, right? We haven't actually said this out loud.
I mean, my guess, I think the worst case scenario is they're both there and then both get re-injured probably with no backup plan. But I don't know. Is there a worst case scenario that I haven't thought of yet?
I'm thinking similar along the lines. Maybe Eric Fisher tries to come back sooner rather than later, but you end up compromising and there's another injury along the way. You take some swings in free agency, but because of the way the salary cap is going to play out. Now, look, it's at least $180 million. I believe it's probably going to land around $186, $185 from what I'm sort of hearing and how the league's sort of filling this thing out. It's not the 210 that every team was projecting a couple years ago, which is just saying a lot. So they're going to strike out in free agency mostly, and nobody's going to want to trade with them to move up in the draft, given what their situation is that everybody so glaringly understands. And it's going to play out similar to what it did in our own mock draft on The Athletic, which, again, I encourage you to read. It's every beat writer sort of giving the team's perspectives that they understand even before we head into free agency. But look, the Buffalo Bills need a left tackle, or they need a tackle. I'm going to butcher his name. Liam E. from Notre Dame. That's who I had circled on our own draft board. I was like, okay, pick 24. Okay, we're starting to have a run on tackles. Okay, there goes Jalen Mayfield. Cool. All right. Okay. They really took Tevin Jenkins. Damn, Baltimore took Tevin Jenkins. Okay, my heart's already been broken once. All right, Liam. Dang. Okay, he's a Buffalo Bill. So that's the worst case scenario, is that there are more tackles this year than last year. Brett Veach acknowledged that, but you still don't get them because you're picking 31. And because of the cap situation, nobody, like Seth mentions, wants to take a one-year deal specifically right now in terms of the Chiefs, because maybe another team could outbid them. And you're rolling the dice on Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher. As much as they are beloved for what they've already accomplished, it will be a lot to ask of them because they're both past 30, coming off pretty significant injuries.
Seth, do you have anything else in that? Because Nate and I talked about tackles for a bit, so
Okay. Yeah, nothing else, just that I want them to I want them to be highly aggressive with the offensive line. And so Brett Veach coming out and saying like that's a number one priority, and people will see this in the article that like if I were Brett Veach, I would prioritize the offense. I would double, triple, quadruple down on the offense because I think the way that they contend year in and year out is by having an elite offense and you know, be good enough on defense. I think that's how they contend. And it just, the season, it feels like it's going to shape up goofy in terms of whether or not they can really address a position that they didn't think they'd be having to address right this second. What about Russell Kung?
Now that's where it gets tricky, my friend, because you could talk about Russell Kung throughout.
Clark Hunt doesn't know what Bitcoin is, so I don't really think that's going to work out.
He's had his own things with the PA. He tried the Bitcoin bit. Do your thing, player. Play on. I just... there's some shakiness. There's some trepidation.
He might have some unique aspects to his personality and opinions that might make Andy go, I don't know. Maybe. But I mean...
Hold on. I know what we're all doing here. Sammy Watkins has been on this team the last several seasons. Like, we all, like...
True.
I don't think having some weird outside-the-box sort of worldviews is going to knock him out of contention.
Well, here's the question. When was the last time he played good? Or played well,
actually. Well, when's the last time he played, actually? True. Are you talking about Watkins or Okun?
Hey! Ooh. When they get into the meetings... When it gets really like to honesty level versus persuasion and affirmation and like an overabundance of, you know, trying to soothe one's ears, somebody has to tap. Hey, when was the last time he played well?
Yeah.
When was the last time he wasn't hurt? When was the last time he was in the right situation?
Yeah,
just these are the questions that somebody has to ask, and that has been pushed in regards to that play.
And that's
still don't know if you're talking about Russell Okung or Sammy Watkins.
There's a few others that you could look at. You could look at Cam Robinson, who hasn't been particularly good. You could look at Alejandro Villanueva.
Yes.
He actually played pretty well last year, I believe.
But the question there is, does he want to keep playing left tackle anymore? Because it's so hard to play left tackle.
It is so hard to play left tackle. Although, you know, he's not going to kick inside because the dude is 6'9". So it's like that dude. But I mean, does he want to play left tackle? It's just hard. Basically is the short answer. Yep. They want to shore up the offensive line, but it's hard. You basically, if you want like to plug in a sure thing at left tackle, you have Trent Williams.
That's it.
That's it. Yep. And he knows that. And I mean, look, go get your money, Trent. Like, you saw what Washington did to you. Just go get your money, unless it's for the Chiefs and they can only offer you a certain amount. Then you should play for Pat Mahomes and set your legacy. I don't know if that's a great sell, but it should be. I just wish I could get in a room with these guys and be like, come on, you know, and think of something more persuasive to say than that. But that's the problem at the left tackle. And then again, in the draft, like you said, teams aren't going to trade with the Chiefs. Can you imagine the angst on Twitter if the Chiefs like traded up and drafted Sewell or like Devonta Smith or something? The wailing and gnashing of teeth would be amazing. But
yeah, they could have that happen for 2 years in a row and have it pan out in a really important, impactful way for the second consecutive year. People losing their mind with who the Chiefs drafted in the first round. Change the game forever.
It's not going to be a cornerback. The odds of it are not going to be a tackle.
Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Center, you could probably get in the second and third round, so a little bit of a reach. Yeah. It all lines up, kids.
So I want to talk more about the edge thing, because I seriously, like, it makes so much sense. I'm not even sure it makes sense in good ways, but also, can you guys think off the top of your head? I have the answer key unless I've missed something. Over the last 4 off seasons, how many draft picks the Chiefs have spent on edges?
Yep.
I've got a 5th for Mike Dana, mm-hmm. a 1st and 2nd for Frank Clark.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
A second for Breeland Speaks, yep, their first pick of that year's draft, and a second for Tanoh Passanya.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, from that group, I believe that going in the next year, you will have an average rotational role player and an average starter. That is what that haul has gotten you at this point.
Keep shooting.
Going into next year.
Keep shooting.
Just more shots.
More shots.
Just more shots.
Look, Brett Veach, you know, I gotta say, there are ways that he can sort of reveal his hand that is understandable in ways. And there's other times where you clearly know that he's, you know, doing the best he can with the status quo and still anticipating what may happen between now and the start of free agency. The Chiefs are, in some ways, I believe, don't get too angry, Seth. In some ways, I think the Chiefs are going to be just as aggressive, if not more aggressive, trying to find an answer at pass rush, just as much as the offensive line. I'm just gonna.
It's good that they're finally gonna prioritize it. Yeah. You know, good for them.
And that's, I gotta tell you though, that's gotta be a frustrating feeling for a lot of people. So like the Clark trade was obviously, you know, a ton of capital, ton of money. And I think it's just tough to accept like that they need to invest more in the pass rush than Frank Clark and Chris Jones.
And, yeah,
like,
and you gave a franchise tag player $20 million per year for
You ought to be able to build a great pass rush around those two guys if you're going to invest that much into it. And here, I'll just be blunt about it because, you know, I've had people ask me, well, they should have done this, that, and the other thing. There was one of those two pass rushers who was great at rushing the passer last year. The other one was not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's frustrating when that's supposed to be your foundational pieces. The reason you can spend that kind of money, that kind of draft capital, is, okay, we can count on these two guys to be great. And then we can kind of fill in. And the problem is, when Frank Clark has played really well, I would say that's by and large worked out. Right? Like,
yeah.
when Clark has been playing at his best, like down the stretch last year, in a few games this year, you would see that kind of complimentary pass rush where he and Jones were just terrified. Like, I mean, all of us remember week three watching Lamar Jackson run for his life, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm, we all remember that. We all remember last year, you know, in the Super Bowl, watching the pass rush eventually just overwhelm Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yep.
It was great to see. But at a certain point, there needs to be an answer. And this is one of those weird things, because had they not traded for Frank Clark, I don't know what other move they would have made that would have given them that kind of production down the stretch and that kind of good play on the edge down the stretch to where they win the Super Bowl. So it's like they already struck the goal that they were aiming for. Yes. But I'm guessing what they were aiming for wasn't just one Super Bowl and then average play. And that's where it gets really complicated with Clark, because they spent, when you combine the draft pick portion of it, they invested much more in him than they did Jones. And Jones is the one who's still playing great when it comes to rushing the passer.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating for people. I think for a lot of people, myself included, that, well, if we just draft another defensive lineman. It's like, isn't the point of paying two guys that much money and then, you know, sending the first rounder for Clark and a second rounder, I believe, isn't the point of spending all that so you don't have to invest highly? It's kind of like the opportunity cost thing that we talk about with, like, you know, like, say, like, you know, the idea that, you know, with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if you take that, then you don't have to do these other things to help, right? Mm-hmm. And if you still have to do those other things to help, then was it really worth it? Does that make sense, or is it just in my head that makes sense?
No, and in fact, like, I'll expand that even a little more, since you kind of brought Jones in. Not that either of these guys are Chris Jones or that either of them are that type of defensive tackle. But there are also two third-round picks in 2019 and 2018 that they spent on defensive tackles, and Colin Saunders and Derek Nnadi. And Derek Nnadi also, I would say, is probably a low-end starter, high-end rotational guy, run stuff or whatever, not really getting after the quarterback. And Colin Saunders lost his job to Tershawn Wharton.
Yep.
There's a lot of capital across that line.
Yeah. Now you have to consider who the defensive coordinator is. And
sure.
Yes.
The fact that they're all in a line. This is Andy Reid, Brett Veach, and Steve Spagnuolo all agreeing that if we can make the quarterback feel uncomfortable, that is the easiest path to making a difference on defense. Even despite
fair
them building a great secondary who at least could supplement what?
I'm sorry. I was just thinking out of like duct tape, spit, and hope.
Yeah,
they built
I
mean, a really good secondary.
They built a great secondary based on scouting, coaching, and guys' ability to just improve at an unexpected rate compared to where they were when they came into the league. So it's all in agreement. Nothing is changing. In fact, I think Brendan Daly understands and has probably even more of a sway now just because of the fact that given their situation and the fact that you have to manage both sides of the football, not necessarily in concert, but you can't, we can't leave it behind too much from offense going to defense or vice versa, to where it just makes a lot of sense for them to say, one, there's a lot more difference-making pass rushers on the market and in some ways where we're positioned in the draft. Mm-hmm. Some ways, sometimes the things just fall the way they fall. That seems to be the case here. I know they want to look at receiver as well, but I think I choose to believe, at least at this point right now on March 2nd, that Brett Veach and the Chiefs are pretty clear that we have to get better at the line of scrimmage, both on the offensive line and on the defensive line, despite what we already have being pretty good compared to a lot of other teams in the NFL.
That's fair. And I suppose you can't necessarily consider sunk cost. Like, it can be frustrating.
Sure.
And that should be acknowledged. But when you're them, they can say, oh, yeah, you know, it would be great if that had been enough. But, you know, it seems like we're needing a little more complimentary help than we planned on. And that I think, is the frustrating part that's hard to not keep coming back on, where I've seen Clark play at his absolute best. And honestly, I would say even last year, which was by far his better year in Kansas City, he still wasn't as good as he was in Seattle the year before.
Right.
And that's frustrating, because if you imagine that dude playing next to Jones, I don't know if they need to keep making this investment. But it does make sense, the idea of, you know, continue to go, because they do look like their best when they're right getting after it. But it's frustrating because I want a shiny new offensive lineman or wide receiver, guys.
So Seth, would you... Now, here's a comment from Brett Veach that clearly made me go, I didn't, you know, everything's...
Was it how they maybe mended fences with Justin Houston?
No, it was not that. Although, hey, a girl can dream, right? Now, Brett Veach, and I want to put this quote on paper, i.e. on the Athletics website/app,
I hope it's the thing that made me go, also. Now, I hope it's the same thing.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's not like we're going to, it's not like free agent is just going to open its gates and we're just going to run in and sign a receiver in the first week. Seth, do you believe that statement? Or do you feel like that is one to tell people, don't worry about us. Don't worry about us.
Did he say it like that?
Let me pull up the quote right.
Because while you pull that up, let me give you the other Easter egg that I thought you might have been going to, which is whenever he finally said out loud that they'd like to get a second tight end who can catch the bleeping football. That is not an exact quote either, but that one at least, I was glad that he just said, you know, tight end too. He just said it. It made it more real. Like, maybe they'll invest in it a little bit.
I'm very interested in, well, for one, the tight end too. Josh, I feel like that, much like, you know, our desire for them to draft a cornerback or trade for one for years. Yep. I feel like tight end two is something we keep talking about.
Yes.
It's just never going to exist. I'm guessing they're going to sign, let me look. I'm looking at the list of free agents. I think they're going to sign Jonnu Smith. Actually, that would be too big of a...
I would tell them to go do that.
They're going to sign Jake Butt.
Well,
that would also be pretty fun. And that they make jokes about Butt.
And that's unnecessary.
Or they'll just they're just gonna tender Nick Kizer and be like, this is the year, guys.
What if I told you that a team in Philadelphia makes a cut and that player just becomes available between now and March 15th?
I wouldn't hate it.
But why would you do that whenever you could just go get the 37-year age season from Greg Olsen, or just see if Jason Witten wants to keep catching passes 2 yards at a time?
Maybe see if Jordan Reed's got anything left.
Ooh. That one.
Tyler Eifert, you know, maybe it's just been a situational issue. Maybe Gronk will play somewhere else. His name.
here's a quote from Brett Veach. Quote, I can't see us running out of the gates the first week of free agency to sign a receiver. I don't think that's where we're at, end quote.
Wow, that's specific. That's like when my, wife unsolicited comes up to me, she's like, you know, I just can't see me just like grabbing a dog and bringing it home to adopt. I'd be like, I was just sitting here eating pizza. I don't know. Why would you say that? You know what I mean? No, you know what? I have a direct experience with this. It wasn't a dog, but it was chickens. And guess what? I have chickens now. Where she's just like, oh, I wouldn't just go out and get chickens. And I was like, it had never entered my mind that you might do a thing like that.
Yeah.
Why'd you bring it up? She's like, well, don't go out to the van.
When opportunity meets, you know, you just, those chickens were a calling.
She just happened to walk. Did you know baby chickens are very cute? In case you didn't know that. But no, that's
And
that
so is Kenny Galloway. I mean, who's to say?
But yeah, and let me just, to all Chiefs fans everywhere, Allen Robinson is probably a pipe dream. That dude's going to get offered $25 million a year somewhere or something. He's going to get offered the crazy wide receiver money, right? Because he's awesome.
Yes.
And I know he's saying,
oh, don't go back to Chicago. Don't go back.
Yeah, don't do it, Allen.
Don't go back.
And I get it. Like the idea of legacy and that kind of stuff. And Allen Robinson would do obscene, borderline, probably couldn't show it on national television things to defenses with Patrick Mahomes throwing him the ball. It would be like what I think they wanted when they grabbed Watkins, if I'm being honest. Like a guy who can dominate any one-on-one matchup. But he's going to get offered an obscene amount of money, and you'd take it too. You would. I would take it. You would take it. We're all buyable at a price. It's just the truth. And there are contenders who can offer him that kind of money too.
Can I tell you something about Kenny Galladay? Because his name keeps coming up, and I think he's really interesting. Kind of like, he's not Allen Robinson, but he would be very interesting in this offense.
Is it Galladay or Galloway?
Galladay.
Galladay. Okay.
He is the same age as Sammy Watkins.
Wow. Sammy feels so... Well, Sammy's only 28.
He's 28, but he's been in the league for 1,000 years already. He's moved teams. I mean, even with the Trent Williams thing, like, that dude played in Washington for long enough that it was just 4 years in my mind, even though it was 9. It was Washington. You age differently. It's like dog years when you're just playing, like, in irrelevance.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Galladay's just been out there just kind of grinding along in Detroit. I'm sure he came out of the league much later in his age than Sammy Watkins did. But it's completely bonkers to me. I'll also shout out this one to our friend and colleague, Matt Derrick, who informed me that Sammy Watkins is also 28 years old, which is lined right up with Byron Pringle. What? Byron Pringle Sammy Watkins are both 28 years old.
That's like when someone told me that Kelsey and Gronk are like the same age.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's what happens when you come out of the league, or you come into the league at like 21, 22, as opposed to 19 or 20. It's crazy what that adds. But here's, you know, so, okay, let's break down this Brett Veach lie. I mean, quote. Well, and here's the deal. He might be telling the truth in a sense, much like Jazz was telling the truth, that she wouldn't just go out and buy chickens.
I think the word we're looking at is running.
Yeah, she didn't run. Running. She calmly got in the car with her friend Lauren, drove to L&M Fleet, calmly walked to the back of the store where the chicks were, very calmly said, hey, I would like 10 of those, calmly put them in the van. So, you know, it could be very calm. Here's the interesting thing to me. When you look at this group of receivers, so you got Allen Robinson and you've got Galladay, if he doesn't get franchise tag, which I don't think he will. But I mean,
it wouldn't make sense for them from a cap standpoint.
It would be weird.
It would be weird. Yeah. And so, but you've got Allen Robinson, and now you've also got T.Y. Hilton on the market, who I think has some juice left. in a certain situation. But if you look at the names of receivers here, so these are guys that even if they're not stars like Robinson, you think, wow, that guy can play. It's weird that they're all free agents. So besides Allen Robinson, you've got T.Y. Hilton. You've got Terrell Williams. You've got Watkins, obviously. You've got Corey Davis. You've got Will Fuller. You've got just Marvin Jones. You've got a few names on here of guys who have been productive in the league for a while and who can still play. And so maybe the plan here is like, no, we're not going to run out there in the first week. You know, Nelson Agholor, who had a great year last year as a deep threat in Vegas. But I mean, look at this. You've got Chris. I mean, now that I'm really looking at this, you've got, I left out a ton of names there now that I finally like use SpotTrack the way you're supposed to. You've got Juju Smith-Schuster, Chris Godwin, Will Fuller, Curtis Samuel, Nelson Agholor, Marvin Jones, Corey Davis, Allen Robinson, T.Y. Hilton. These are all guys who can play. And so maybe the idea is, how many teams in a weird cap year are going to break the bank on a receiver? Two or three?
I don't know the answer to that. I think the max, no one's told me.
I think the max is four would be my guess right now, because some teams are going to be somewhat hesitant because, look, it's still a good rookie draft class coming in, y'all. It's rookie draft class. It ain't exactly what it was last year, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, what if you're the Chiefs?
I would say four. I think Corey Davis is the real intriguing guy because we on The Athletic have him as the fifth best receiver based on years, service, athletic ability, and the fact that he really has no big injury history of late. If Corey Davis gets a big deal, that may change the market some, but he's kind of like that. He's kind of that dividing line, I would say. And whatever happens to him, and this is why I put him in one of my stories last week, like he's the tier that the Chiefs can sniff around, where I feel like maybe a Nelson Agholor or a Curtis Samuel is more realistic. But I would say, to answer your question, Seth, I'd say four, maybe five, with Corey Davis being the fifth guy.
Right. And that would be, and then so then if you're a guy, let's say it's like four at the most. Then someone's on the outside looking in, and it's either a slightly younger guy like a Curtis Samuel or a Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin, we are not that far removed from him being considered like maybe the best receiver in the league. And so it's been oddly quiet that he's hitting free agency. Am I wrong on that?
No.
Because he was unbelievable.
I think some people assume that Tampa Bay is going to make it work, but I mean, he's going to take phone calls. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
he's going to take phone calls. Well, and he's a dude that's going to look. If I were to bet, I would say Allen Robinson. If we're like, let's say four guys are going to get a huge deal, I'm guessing it would be Robinson, Godwin, Davis, and then maybe I just can't see Juju getting paid this year.
So
maybe Juju gets a huge contract. Maybe someone gives Agholor a huge contract or Fuller a huge contract. But all those guys have certain amounts of question marks. Same with Curtis Samuel. So eventually what you have is those three guys or those four guys get a huge contract. Now you've got guys like, say, Curtis Samuel isn't one of the guys that gets a really big contract. So now he's got a choice here. Do you sign some kind of mid-tier contract that's probably going to be even lower than normal because it's COVID and free agency is always feast or famine? But this year, it's going to be even more so. Or do you try to sign a one-year deal where you think you can light it up, right? Like if you're Juju Smith-Schuster and you've got all kind of this negative publicity now, you want to talk about a player who would be built to take advantage of individual matchups and play X? 1 year in Andy Reid's system might really rehabilitate that. Wasn't that long ago we were talking about Juju as, you know, the next big thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's where I think their opportunity lies, is you either get that or a one-year ring chaser who still got it, like Marvin Jones, right? Marvin Jones can play, and he's 31. Maybe he wants to chase a ring.
Hey, Seth, we just need to get in a room and tell these boys one thing. You better ball out. You better ball.
There's so many options here that maybe that's what he means when he says, we're not going to rush out the first week. You know what I mean? Where it's like you wait for that second round of guys.
And what's a week? Are we talking like 4 days? Does 4 days qualify a week because it's more than three, which gives you the majority of the week? Are we saying 7 days? Are we saying 5 days business week? What are we saying?
Yeah. Yeah. As you well know, you could be in my profession. It's all in the definitions, my friend. All in how you define the terms. But wide receiver is a place I think they should go. I think they've got a lot of options this year, an unusually large number of options. And then offensive line. And then I really want them to pick up a shiny new toy. Like, I want them to like pick up a shiny new toy on the offensive line or receiver in free agency, and then do it again in the first round. And all this defensive end talk is really harshing my buzz, as it were.
Yeah, so I think they're going to see if they can bring in Matt Judon. He's hitting the market. Clowney should be, he'll be free again soon. Might take a little longer with his injury rehab. Kyle Van Noy just got cut. Yannick Ngakoue, funny that he hit the market. And Justin Houston, he's back out there. I think the Chiefs try to bring in all of them and then spend all their draft picks on edges.
Look, would it be weird if, you know, you're rooting for Pittsburgh because they're bringing back Ben Roethlisberger again?
Yeah, they are.
Hey, Bub Dupree, we don't have any money for you.
Is that the end of the pitch?
I don't know.
It's a bad pitch, Nate. That's a bad. Hey, Bud Dupree, we have no money for you. See you later.
And then maybe the Chiefs make a phone call or two. I'm just, you know, just
yeah.
Maybe putting that out there.
And that's the thing. You're going to see a few more cuts like that.
They just told Ben Roethlisberger, we ain't got no money for you. And that they're still bringing him back. So what do you want me to say?
That's fair. It's a good point. I want you to say goodbye to everybody because this show's gone as long as it can legally be allowed to. And here's what I will say. Some stuff we didn't get to that you can go read. Seth's story about what he'd do if he was Brett Veach is on its way. I don't even know. It might be out by the time this podcast is out. If not, somewhere thereabouts. You can also go read about Nate's story on Brett Veach, how they're going to improve the offensive line, all the free agent targets. We talked about several of them, but just go check out everything they've got up so far. Seth also had a little two-parter in the Chief of the North newsletter about some of the best plays, some of the best moments mm-hmm. of the season. You can go check that out and check out Seth's newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. I think one thing this has proven, folks, is that we got to do this show on a consistent basis over the course of the offseason, and maybe eventually we'll start doing episodes that are less than an hour long. Maybe. Still unlikely, but probably worth trying. You can follow everybody on Twitter as well. I'm at JB Briscoe. Nate is at by Nate Taylor. Seth is at Real MN Chiefs Fan. I think that's everything, and if it is everything, it means the last word goes to Nate again.
All the Chiefs have to say is, but aren't we all just on 1 year deals? So why don't you just take this 1 year deal right now, dog?
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.